You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 158. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. Today is Thursday, October 3rd, as you're listening to this on the podcast. For those of you joining on the live stream, welcome. It is a great show, a year-end show, as tonight is our as we record, our last episode of the regular season, the weekly season, and you could argue the first episode of the true off-season for us. Steve, we're going to be looking through a ton of great stuff here. All those episodes throughout the year where we say, we'll have to come back to this at the end of the year, see how it goes. And we've got a lot of homework that we've done to basically grade the papers for us, whether it's a chalkboard recap when we call out targets and fades at the start of the season, or a handful of other episodes that we've done that we'll get into. Very much looking forward to it. How's it going, man?
It's good. It's good. I feel like this was like on our mission statement, right? Like we were going to look back at our advice and, yeah, and see how we did and audit our takes. And I think we've been true to that for the last, what, this is the fourth season of our show? Third baseball season?
Fourth. This is our crazy fourth full season.
Fourth full baseball season. So we've given out a good amount of advice there. And I think we've done pretty well and are getting better and have always been honest with ourselves, at least. So excited to get into it. They're always fun episodes to do. And I think this will, I'm sure, you know, obviously with prep for next year comes looking back a lot, but this is kind of like the bookend to 2024 in a sense. So one last look back and discussion about all of the guys that we like, that we recommended, that we, you know, try to help everyone that listens to this show and see how we did. And it's always a fun thing to do, and I'm glad that we still do it and hold ourselves accountable to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And housekeeping wise, we will be every other Thursday throughout the off season, guys, through probably around the February time frame. I think officially, Steve, we go back to weekly in March, but we might cheat up a little bit.
Yeah. And I think we, you know, we have the flexibility. Like if we have extra shows, Adam always accommodates us. Adam Howe, who runs the podcast network here at Pitcherless, does an amazing job of that. So, you know, maybe we stop in a few more times throughout the winter, depending on what's going on and how we're doing. We have some good guests already lined up, which is fun. So excited to do that and excited to look back one more time and then get into the prep for 2025. Weird to say that, like we're halfway done with the 2020s. That's crazy to me.
If Wins Above Fantasy was a high school student, Steve, this would be graduation. We're seniors, but we're not moving on. We're just retaking high school all over again. Enough of that analogy. If you guys have hung with us all season, it would mean a ton if you could go out, give us a rating and review. Hopefully we helped your teams throughout the year. I know we both had good seasons from a fantasy perspective, and as analysts here, podcasters, that's what this show is all about. And once again, belated congrats, Steve, to you for winning the home league. That's something you'll carry all off season, and hopefully some of these names on here helped with that. I'd imagine both of us will be getting into that as we go throughout the show.
You look a little bit more forward to prep coming off a title like that. It just helps keep the wind in your sails a bit. I know, and I know this wasn't on the rundown. I know we got a jam-packed rundown, but I think on the last day of the season, you passed me in our listener league too. I think you finished eighth. I finished ninth. So nothing respectable there, but pass me on the last day. It was a tough year all around for me for NFBC. Not to make excuses, but I essentially checked out of all those leagues when I was like in the playoffs for my home league and making a run there. But
you and I have been trapped in purgatory. Like I finished eighth, seventh.
I'm 8, 9, 12, 8 for my four NFBC leagues. And I did win quote unquote win. I came in first in like the qualifying round in the RAS Slam. So
That's good.
84th overall, which, I mean, Rat Slim has, I don't know, how many
Two hundred plus,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think something like that.
Well, there you go. That's the only one I've ever done well in, and it was really well last year. But yeah, you and I, we're due for a TGFBI that's like top three or something like that.
Yeah,
but that's something to.
Maybe we'll do a resolution show. That's definitely going to be a resolution for me to become
it.
A better NFBC player.
Well, like you said, Steve, we got a jam-packed show. I think this might be one of the longest in terms of amount of names rundowns we've ever had. So we'll see how this goes. It's typically a deep dive type of pod. We'll do our best to keep it high level, but we got to start with the chalkboard. And for anybody who is not familiar, we've done this 4 years in a row. But like Steve said, it's the mission statement where we wanted to be accountable not only on our hits, but also our misses. So every year, right before the season starts, we pick three or four targets and three or four fades, and we grade it on if they either outperform or underperform their ADP by 20%. So a guy whose ADP was 200, they would have to move up or down 40 picks, and you kind of get the gist. So if they're like a third rounder, they have to move less, but there's, you know, that's tougher to do when you're moving from like, you know, pick 36 down to 25 or whatever it is. So we had a special guest come on as part of a PitchCon prize this year where James Geary joined us and gave his targets and fades. So this was the first year we've had an additional name in the hat, Steve. But I'll just kind of rattle these off. And I think
did pretty well for the first chalkboard. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. James did do well. Let's start with James. He went 3 for 6 on his targets. He missed out on Christopher Morel. He missed out on Cedric Mullins as well. I was about to say Chris Mullins. It's been a long week with the baby. That's a dream team specialist there. But yeah, Cedric Mullins needed to go up to 118 on the Razzball player rater, and he finished 130th. So James
not bad. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
That
one's right in spirit. That like if it you is. Took that advice, you're not. I know we're strict graders on this, but like if you follow James on that, that's
solid.
A win, you know.
Yeah, you're not unhappy about that. Yeah. And then Gunnar Henderson, man, that is hats off. He acknowledged that Gunnar on the show. He was like, I know it's easier to kind of go for the deep balls, but I think this one's a good one. Gunnar Henderson would have to move from pick 30 up to top 24 finish. And what do you know? Gunnar finished 7th. And at the time, I had already drafted him, so I was singing the praises saying I hope this comes true, and I rode that in my home league all season. He was one of the guys I mentioned last week on the show. So Gunner was 1 for 3, or he was 1 for 3 on the targets with Gunner. Obviously a fantastic season. We talked about him ad nauseum over the past couple shows, so we'll keep rolling to James's fades. He had CJ Abrams, who was ADP 37, so he needed to slide as far as 44th on the player rater. Finished 73, so not like a bust in all caps, but you know, just sometimes you play the game on draft day price, mm-hmm. guys who get, you know, a speed tax or position, which was another one he hit, which, spoiler alert, you did as well, Steve, on Adley. And Adley, whose ADP was 52nd, had to go to 63, and he finished 105 on the player rater, so solid fades from both of you guys. I know we talked
tough
about
Adley. On Adley because he was, we talked about this last show or two shows ago. He was looking like one of the best fantasy seasons from a catcher like ever through June.
I think you conceded.
He got hurt, like an early
concession on one of our pods.
Yeah.
And
like,
I was wrong on that one.
You know, I hate to claim a victory because of injury. And even like he didn't even miss time, right? Like he just gutted through it, which is, makes it even like you feel even worse, but I don't know. Maybe I considering how good he was in those first few months, and there was an injury that you could tie to the performance dip. Like, if he's not the same price that he was last year at ADP 52, I could be very, very interested if he falls a little bit and people don't realize how much that performance drop off in the second half, or really from July on, was due to that injury. And him just clearly battling through it and not being the same player.
Now, we gotta call out bad misses as well, and it is worth noting that James had Dylan Cease as a fade, and man, Cease finished on the player rater 28th overall. So
I think that was before this season. Was before he got traded to the Padres, potentially. I don't remember. I know that was a pretty late spring training trade, if I remember that correctly. So maybe he does get a bit of a mulligan there. I don't know. Like, I would have found it hard to believe to jump off that hype train and fade him. But regardless, we still have to hold him accountable. But still, good job, James. That's really good. Our first chalkboard was a disaster. So to have three of six is good. Steve, yours was good. Mine was a disaster.
So how this is ran for Steve and I is is year one, I just had the crystal ball. I was looking like just the ultimate oracle when it came to, I think it was Marcus.
Yeah, we were about
Simeon
to shut down the podcast. Bigot. Like, you know, you couldn't be getting out this information.
I was red hot. at your wedding, everybody was praising me. Listen, I was riding high. And then year two, Steve swept it. And then last year, it was like dead heat between Steve and I on the picks. This is a good segue to tip a cap to James, because in his first year, he went 3-for-6. I went 2-for-6, Steve. My targets that I missed on were Jung-Hoo Lee, which injury, but even before the injury, it wasn't, it's funny going back and listening to it. I think I referred to him as Stephen Kwan with more pop, and Stephen Kwan showed the more pop, himself with 14 homers. And yeah, Jung-Hoo Lee, it was forgettable. I mean, we'll see. Now he's going to be practically free, right? Because we saw the average was okay at .262, but in 37 games, couple homers, sub 700 OPS. So I think Jung-Hoo Lee might be a good one for like a 50 round best ball, because I do still think there's a good player in there.
There were some good skills indicators too, if I remember correctly, with Jung-Hoo Lee. Like, there was a good like hard hit rate. I know it's super small sample, but he was looking like a good buy low, right? And this, like, even though it was 158 plate appearances, which is a 641 OPS, the XBA was higher, the square, like, he looked like a Kwan with like a bit more power, like a above average hard hit rate, elite strikeout rate and whiff rates. Mm-hmm. I think this could be a good call, though. It is the shoulder, right? So, I don't know. That makes me a little bit hesitant. But, you know, if all systems are go in spring training, I think Jung-Hoo Lee could be don't forget about that sort of name.
Yes, I totally agree. My other miss was AJ Puck, although on K-minus BB in the second half of the season, I believe he led the majors with a 41, or at least since August, 41.3% K rate, 3.3% walk rate. Just nuts. That said, didn't pick up saves. He finished on the player rater at like .298. If you turn the time machine back, we thought AJ Puck would be a starter all season. I was really
excited.
And
to give ourselves some credit, I think we also said that like the downside is that he could go back and be a good reliever, which he was.
Yeah, he was solid. The 3.15 ERA, 1.11 whip, and that's with kind of the blowups early on. So Puck is still a great pitcher. It's just like he's allergic to starting the game on the mound, which, what are you going to do? But I will, to give myself a little credit, the hit that I did have of my targets was Marcell Ozuna, which by the numbers was probably one of the bigger value adds that we called out, where Ozuna had to go from 146 ADP to a 121, and he finished 11th on the Razzball player rater. And he was there because we did kind of a midseason report cards too, Steve, and I think he was 7th at the time. So Ozuna just never really, really stopped. I mean, that was, we'll get to it later, but strength of schedule was another late show in July that we flagged the Braves as having a light schedule, and Ozuna went off. And I think the power came down a little bit, but he hit like 330 in a month.
There was some dip in power, especially in think in September more so than August. Yeah, like the last 30 days of the season, he had a 759 OPS with just two home runs. So,
Different production.
Yeah, but still, I mean, he essentially replicated last season he was better. He was 20 points better by OPS, 28 points better by batting average. You didn't pay that cost. You didn't pay full cost for him for his 40 homer season 2023, and you got better, which is crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, util only, not sure. even close to any eligibility. Didn't play in the field once for good reason. That said, just 33 years old. I think it's we're like quick to put him in the David Ortiz category, and it's like he's not that old.
Really. Yeah, and I've talked about it before with Otani. The tax on util only guys is I think it's a market inefficiency. Like Ozuna's bat is second round value, but there's no way he goes in the second round next year. Like he's going to go probably like the fourth or the fifth, maybe even a little bit later because he's older and he's util only. Those are two things that this industry is biased against. So
And no
I'm down to ride with you next year. Yeah. Yeah. No speed too. That's another big tax.
We'll see where it's at, but I think you're right that maybe fourth, fifth, cause that lineup gives him a bump, but yeah, that's Ozuna there. It was a good hit for me. And then a good fade for me, although also another one that was hampered with the injury was Bobby Miller, who was ADP 69, which had just been climbing up, man. That one, it was like in the month of March, went from probably 100 all the way up to 69. Everybody was jumping in. So he needed to fall back to 83. And obviously Bobby Miller had a rough season in many different ways, but finished outside of 1,000. I faded Lane Thomas as well, and he just went under, which that was a funny one listening back because you pushed back, Steve, and I said, okay, ADP 108. I go, I don't think he's going to be like, you know, a complete lost cause because you brought up that he kind of always overperforms compared to his like savant sliders and his batted ball data. He's just a guy that gets the most out of his skill set. And he needed to go back to 130. And I was commenting that, like, I think he'll be like 160, 170. Well, he finished 123. So behind his ADP, but not enough for the threshold, which puts me in last place because I also missed out on Hunter Green, who I kind of acknowledged that it was feast or famine. I just didn't trust the ballpark, the command issues. And Hunter Green had a nice season, finished 71 overall on the player radar.
And missed some time too. Was looking like it could, and he was like in a groove when he got hurt too for few months of season. So that could have been higher, but it was a true breakout for him, which
man, I haven't even
we were in yet. I feel like we were in on him, we're out on him, he breaks out. You know, that's
I know, man. Because 2 years ago he was one that I mean he was kind of the PLV poster child where it was like if PLV is worth its salt, then Hunter Green is gonna be a stud. And it was like a 1 year too early thing, even though the K's were still insane. But yeah, the walk rate got, you know, a little bit better. But overall, like location was fantastic, and he just couldn't be hit. So
and it seemed like he like took off some like a tick from his fastball, took off a little bit of stuff. It was like he sort of sacrificed that little bit of stuff for the extra bit of command that he needed to become this. Essentially, you know, ace of a starting pitcher, and he did, and it worked. And I'm excited for Hunter Green next year. I think he came back and like threw a few starts at the end of the season, if I remember that correctly. So like that's encouraging that he came back. Right? It's not like we have to wait for him to prove that he's healthy in spring training.
Yeah, a couple starts, and they both looked good. And in September, you know, three innings, four innings, but strikeout per inning. And yeah, that just to round that out, the line for Hunter Green. 150 innings, 169 strikeouts. That's a 27% K rate, almost 28. So yeah, to your point, Steve, he kind of pulled that down a little bit, but the trade-off is worth it for the ratios, which dropped from a 4.82 ERA to a 2.75, and the whip dropped from 142 to 102.
Yeah, that's the good stuff.
Yeah, he's going to be a fun one to talk about in the offseason. So I missed on that. And Steve, If it was a rubber match from last year, you edged me out with a 3-for-6 here. Do you want to talk through these?
Yeah, I do. And the first guy and the most important guy that I think I want to talk about on this list is one of my misses and one of the guys that was your hit. I think we had a mayor's bet for Bobby Miller that I definitely owe you a pitcherless T-shirt or something.
Oh, wow.
But on Bobby Miller.
Then we got a trade because I still have not given you yours for the Juan Soto board bet last year. So, you know, rather than it being a wash, we both just need to buy each other something from the merch store.
Let's each pick a shirt from the pitcherless merch store and send it to each other.
Valid. But, yeah, what to make of Miller? He's still got the velo. The Ks were all right, but, I mean, holy smokes,
So this is going to sound I don't want it to sound like I'm not taking my L. Like it was bad. I rostered Miller a lot of places and did not have him on any rosters by the end of the season. But I think when there's analysis of Bobby Miller, like there's been so much diving into the control of his fastball and the fact that he wouldn't throw his slider in certain games, and we're breaking down all of these starts and all these bad starts. And I don't think that it's even fair to even do that. Bobby Miller got hurt, and Bobby Miller was never the same from the second inning on in the second start in Chicago. That first start against St. Louis.
Yeah.
I remember you texting me just being like, holy Bobby Miller. Like it was that opening day, or I think it was the second day of the season.
Yep.
And Bobby Miller went 6 innings, 11 Ks, 2 hits, 1 walk. His next start at Chicago, first inning, he strikes out the side. Looks absolutely ridiculous. Like, looks like it's like, here he goes again. He's going to have a better start than he did in St. Louis. Second inning, he comes out, loses all command, can't find the plate, doesn't even finish the inning, gives up 5 runs, doesn't go on the IL, makes one more start, goes on the IL, doesn't come back till June. And it is
throwing shoulder, too. Yeah.
Yes.
Throwing shoulder.
Miller got hurt. Something was off, and I think we just need, like, the fact that it almost would be like the industry would do a better job, or we would have more information had he just not pitched from April 5th on, like after that second start against the Cubs.
Because he threw a lot.
He threw a lot. I mean, he did. And the Dodgers were in desperate need of innings. Every single pitcher got hurt. He ended up throwing 56 innings at the major league level this year, and there were some in the minors too. I just don't think I think you just have to sort of scrap this. And what I'm going to choose to remember, maybe this is a fault of mine and maybe I'm blinded by this, but I'm going to remember the start and then inning. I know it's small sample and funny even just listening to that, of Miller being the Miller that we expected. And when he looked so good in spring training, I think it's sort of like the Adley thing. It just happened, you know, 8 innings into the season, 7 innings into the season. He hurt his shoulder and was never the same. Sure, he didn't need surgery, but it was clearly bothering him. Like, he stopped throwing his slider. He lost all command of his fastball.
He's
He wasn't this command artist.
But he's not an 8.52 ERA pitcher, so something was clearly going on.
You know, yeah. There wasn't a Hunter Green level sort of worry about his command than it was for Miller up until this year. You know, he never really had a walk rate above 10 in the minors, and they were all relatively good. Like, you know, he had a 10% walk rate in 14 innings in AAA to start the season last year. That was the highest. It was below 8 at every other stop, you know, 8.1 in 91 innings in AA. Like, he never had this control problem that showed up this year in that 11% walk rate. Like, I think Bobby Miller just needs to get healthy. Obviously, yes, it's a pretty big L for this year and was a tough take. And like, I think I've kind of learned to try and stop to force that pitcher 100 value. And I think I talked about it last week, like how I want to draft pitchers is draft ace like pitchers in later rounds. They're not going to be aces, but I want to draft guys who can give you ace like innings for an extended amount of time. Guys like I hit on, like Shota Umaga, guys like, you know, Dylan Cease at a higher cost, you know, guys like, you know,
Flaherty.
Seth Lugo, yeah. Jack Flaherty, exactly. Guys that aren't going to be top 10 on the list in pitcher list, but guys that have a run that could be like a top 10 pitcher that makes them, you know, worth that gamble on upside. And I think next year that potentially Bobby Miller may be in a range where I could talk myself into doing that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's totally fair. He's a phenomenal bounce back candidate for obvious reasons. It's all just going to come down to where that investment is, because you're right, Steve, they do pop up. And it's like, when even if you shop from that range of, like, you know, pick 90 to 150, because those ones are a little bit pricier than like the all bets are off, like Ryan Pepio range, everything. You still had Chris Sale in that zone. And it's like every year there's There's ones that I guess you could say
it's like a little chronotype. Like it's like, all right, if you got sniped on Bobby Miller, but then Chris Sale, was your process wrong?
Well, Hunter Green was two starters after Sale. So it's just like if Bobby Miller's going in that 100 to 130 range just because of, you know, what will obviously be some industry buzz if he looks healthy and has a couple good starts in spring and everyone says, look, he's back to this guy, then you're going to have to just look at who's around him. And like, I don't know, gut reaction. Do you think like that's probably what, like eighth round, ninth round?
No way he gets up. No way he gets up that high. No way.
You don't think so?
No, no way. Absolutely. Okay. No shot with how bad this year was.
For sure. A disaster. I just, yeah, that we're one removed from it. And I wonder, you know, is it going to be the Hunter Green treatment where Green, even after a rough 2023.
Yeah, was Hunter Green ever this bad, though?
Not in terms of ratios, but if people are saying throw it out because he was injured, well, yeah, we'll see. But I do think like by the end of March, the over-under for me on Bobby Miller is like pick 125.
Really? I would take the over there, but I don't know. Maybe I'm doubting the hype train of
a
young
fast,
stud.
Well, and like when the industry starts liking these guys, they can move 30, 40 slots. Sure, you know what I mean? Like, look what happened with Imanaga and you know, some of those, there's a handful of other ones.
Yeah,
here,
risers. Yeah. Yeah. SP exactly. Guys with steam behind them for sure. Happens every year.
So you started with Miller, but talk to me about the targets. You went 1 for 3 here with, missing on Miller. Francisco Alvarez was another miss, which, you know, kind of, again, that was an interesting one because the catcher, you rarely see the catcher as the target.
That's a tough one to go at. I mean, he was hurt, didn't look that great when he was playing. I'm wondering how much it was a thumb injury, right? And he needs surgery on, like, that's got to sap your power. So it's kind of like another one that's like, hey, maybe don't fully write this off for next year.
Don't
like,
move off of him.
He still has, you know, 30 homer power potential from the catcher spot, just because you know, he had thumb surgery this year. May not be the case, but this one I was pretty proud of. I'm glad I stuck on board. Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Baby,
he was at ADP 30, needed to get to 24, finished 12 on the Razzball Player Rater. So it was looking bad too from the beginning of the season. Like, I bookmarked a bunch of tweets of like guys like saying that Vlad stinks, like bat of eighth in the lineup. And I probably shouldn't have done this. It was very petty of me, but I did do some retweeting at the end of end of September after his amazing year.
Yeah, phenomenal average and pop. Not quite the 2019
I still think he's a 35 homer bat. Like, he had some pretty long power droughts. He had some amazing power runs, but like, if those power runs come after like 4 or 5 homer months rather than like 2 months of 2 and 2, like, that's going to help the homer total for Vlad overall. And like, honestly, like, no one's complaining about his season, even though it was quote unquote just 30 homers for him.
No way.
He was
monster.
He was really, really good. I think it was like third in the league of doubles too, like second in the AL in hits. So crazy, crazy good year for Vlad.
Glad
I stuck with it. Yeah.
And you overtly said honorable mention Shota Imanaga, who, I mean, I know we both liked him, Steve. I think I wrongfully went with, why am I blanking on the, Yamamoto.
Yamamoto.
I had so many shares of Yamamoto, and I feel like I kept missing on Imanaga, but
I had a lot of shares of Yamamoto too, but I had more of Imanaga and sort of
that's good. Yeah.
He was like the guy that I made sure I got in like most leagues. Funny enough, I didn't get him in like, I think I only got him in 1 or 2 NFBC leagues. Just shows how sharp and hard those leagues are. But like,
26th.
That's where I wanted to get him. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. On the player rater, he finished 26th, and the ADP at the time, he would have needed to get to 126. So you were that close to going 4 for 6 here, but
Think I'll be touching him next year at all. Cause I'm sure he'll be drafted as a top 20 to 15 starting pitcher.
Disposable aces. And then, you had We already talked about Adley, but you also hit on Esturi Ruiz, which is the Steve Gisuelli special of fading the rabbits.
I don't know who that's going to be for me next year.
There's always one that's in that 100 to 150 range. And then Fromber was one that, luckily for my home league's sake, Fromber really turned
this
it around.
This is like the opposite of the Adley. Oh, I know who my Seals only fade is going to be next year, Bryce Terang. There you go. Early look at my chalkboard. So with Fromber, it was looking good for, I mean, not good for him, but he really took off after like a pretty rough first 2 months. Like the strikeouts weren't really there. Mm-hmm. The ratios weren't great, but I think he found, I remember Nick Pollock writing about it, his curveball, and just, you know, became the amazing Fromber, that we know and love, from like June on. Yeah, he had a 5.34 ERA in May. He was good in 12 innings in April, but also got lit up in his March start. So it was pretty rough till June, but then after that, he was just absolutely insane once he found that curveball in June. So yeah, shame on me for doubting Fromber, but he really did pick up everything and like looks like the ace that he was 2 or 3 years ago, right? Like where he was pairing that elite. I was concerned because he had the 54% ground ball rate down from 70% in 2021. And the strikeouts were up, but I still didn't think it was enough to offset the ground balls. But the ground ball rate went back up to 61%. Strikeout rate stayed at 24%, and boom, there you go. That's a great year for Fromber. So pretty bad miss on my part, but good year for Fromber. Yeah,
Astros all together, their pitching staff. But yeah, pre All Star break, 3.66 ERA. Post All Star, 1.96 ERA. So definitely turned it around. And the strikeout rate, not having the percentages in front of me, but flipped big time, where he went from like 7.5 strikeouts per inning to well over a strikeout per inning in the second half. So yeah, like you said, the curveball was a huge part of that. Fromber is going to be drafted again as an ace with his workload. So we've got that rounds out chalkboard. Again, Steve 3-for-6, James 3-for-6, and yours truly 2-for-6. We got a lot more to get into, but we got to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, keeping with the pitchers, I think that's the 24th, right? That wasn't as early as July 4th.
I think it was July 4th. I think that was was what my podcast feed showed me. Yeah.
All right. I was just listening to this one, just going back. You're right. July 4th, we did second half pitching breakout candidates. And this was coming off of when we did the hitter candidates the week prior. We were basically looking, you know, Steve in years past has written articles on second half breakouts with just podcasting and life, less of the write up. And we said, okay, let's just do a show dedicated to both hitting and pitching breakout candidates. And on this, like going back, first of all, it's hilarious that we had like four Rays and four yeah. Tampa Bay Rays on this list, which is always a decently safe bet. But really the only one of the Rays, because we had Pepio, who was solid, but not necessarily like a breakout.
Todd Bradley, he had a weird struggled. Like infection, missed some time, and was a bit up and down. I think give Pepio to normal season. I think he's on a short list of guys that I want for next year for sure.
Yes, I will be back in for sure. Todd Bradley and Shane Baz both missed as well. And
I know you have Baz here as a miss, but he was really good down the stretch.
I was just looking at his overall.
The strikeouts weren't there and the ERA indicators aren't there. But I mean, as far as like hit suppression and run suppression, he was good. And I think that, you know, a second year back from Baz, like the next thing is like, hey, maybe the stuff ticks up a little bit. Here for Baz. So
Yeah, that's fair. I must have been looking at a weird split. I thought his ratios looked a lot worse, but maybe that
I mean, if you look from like his last 40 or 50 innings, they're
I know what it was, Steve. I was sorting off a K minus BB.
And it's not great.
I think Boz was like 90th or something.
Yeah, it's not great. But, so like that's why his FIP is above 4, you know, Sierra also above 4. But I don't know. I maybe this is another bias of just loving Shane Boz and waiting for this to happen for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have doubts that Shane Boz's stuff is going to tick back up and he could be a K minus BB darling again. Compare that with what seemed like a season where he had this sort of quote unquote pitch through it and pitched to a 2.09 ERA over his last 40 innings. I'm willing to bet that his stuff comes back and the strikeout rate goes to like 26-27% in a fully normal offseason, not recovering from TJ.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's fair. And honestly, it's probably going to present a value in draft rooms that some of the shiny stuff under the hood didn't look as good. But we know if you're just kind of betting on the talent, and like you said, we've been hyping him for 3 years, I think it's going to suppress the cost on draft day to where Boz is still in that, like, you know, beyond pick 160 range where you can still grab a potential ace if everything clicks, because we know he can be that good. On the K minus BB leaderboard, both Jeffrey Springs and Grayson Rodriguez, which I can't believe at that time, I was just listening and brushing up to the show. At the time, Jeffrey Springs was only 19% rostered in Yahoo, and he was weeks away from returning. And I mean, it wasn't as, you know, out of this world as the start of his 2023, when he looked like he was like, you know, just charging toward like a Cy Young after 3 or 4 starts. He did still put up really good numbers, and the K minus BB for both him and Grayson was 18.3%, which would have been 33rd among starting pitchers during that time frame. So Springs is an interesting one. Because again, you look at like the whole body of work and it's only 7 starts, but they did look solid other than, the whip is what's coming down there with a 136, but the ERA at 327 and the, again, K minus BB looked really good. And then Grayson Rodriguez was a little bit different because obviously he was not 19% rostered, right? I mean, he was rostered everywhere. But that was one that it was like we were waiting for the complete breakout for Grayson. And I don't know. I feel like we're still waiting on that, right, Steve? Like, it's not like he blew the doors off to where now, like, next season, I don't know that he's going to be drafted as, like, that high-risk SP1 that he was drafted at this year. He finished the season with the 3.86 ERA, 26.5 K percentage. 7.3% walk rate is okay. But yeah, in terms of like the second half of the season, that the ratios weren't all that great, a 3.71 ERA.
Grayson left me wanting more. But I'm still in just based on the fact that he's got 5 pitches with above stuff, above average stuff plus, that elite change up, a really good slider, like, you know,
and injuries showed,
yeah that's true. He has been banged up, and I mean, it was I forget what the exact injury was.
I just switched over here, right shoulder at the lat. end of April was right shoulder, and then it was right lat in lat. August.
Yes and he's not coming back for the playoffs too, which is a bummer. But I mean, you know, it was, it's tough too because it's less innings than he had in 2023, right? Like, that's why we were sort of excited about Grayson, because he had, you know, 122 major league innings last year, 41 in the minor, so 160. So like, you're like, you know, he can get up to 180, then 200. Now it's sort of like, all right, can he get back to 150 next year?
Yeah.
Like, I understand why Grayson is so projectable. And I'm sure, like, this is a guy that I'm sure there's going to be a ton of hype on, like, the second that he has, like, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, no, he's having a normal offseason throwing program back in line. Like, and, you know, I know why Nick Pollock is so excited about him and all these smart pitching analysts are so excited about him. it just is. There's a lot of cold water, I guess, thrown on it, considering the injuries, the fact that it was a really good, not amazing season. You did see the flashes, though. Like, I know you like to play the game log game, and, like, you know, there's the 10 strikeout game, a bunch of 8 strikeout games, you know, a 9 strikeout game. Like, it looks good, but it's just, you know, it seemed like one thing was missing, whether it's, you know, a few too many blow up starts and a little bit too many injuries. But I don't know, maybe that's being a little bit too harsh, and you sort of just have to kind of Hunter Green it and be like, look, like, this guy has all the stuff in the world, and maybe even better stuff and better control and command than even a Hunter Green. So just keep on buying it until it happens.
Yeah, his ADP was 71 last season, and you have to imagine, especially with the volume, that's got to come down to,
you,
like,
you think yeah,
you think he,
yeah,
just stays there. I mean,
I
just
because
other
stays there, yeah.
I don't know, man. Other pitchers, though, like, pop up, you know. So it's true. Like, when you look at how many, like, what do you do with you know, take like a Jack Flaherty or a Ronaldo Lopez, who aren't as
Grayson
much
goes,
like
Grayson
industry
goes, Grayson goes before those guys.
Before Flaherty, who just had Flaherty with 200 strikeouts.
Yes.
Only 28.
That's how these top prospects, upside guys go. Like, Jack Flaherty's old news, man.
I can't. I won't be there. I won't be there for,
you know, I'm not saying that it's not right to, if it is the case, then Flaherty goes behind him. Like, not right, you know, that it's not the right decision to wait and take a Jack Flaherty. I just think the market will be more excited about a 25-year-old stuffist, the former number one pitching prospect, Grayson Rodriguez, than it will, you know, a refurbished, you know,
Flaherty, who was once
used car
the best,
lot. Yeah, yeah,
the best second half performance in MLB history,
yeah,
from Jack,
yeah,
Flaherty,
yeah.
All right. I mean, well, you know, time will tell. Time will tell. But if we get a tax on a Grayson who just put together a season that was underwhelming and has volume questions because of it, and I'm there. Like, dude, the 7 foot plus extension,
wasn't that disappointing though? I mean, 27% strikeout rate, 7.3% walk rate, 134. It's 116 innings.
Yeah, man. Because a 3.86 ERA this year is like a 4.2 in years past. Like,
you think
on the player rater, he was 166, and I know there's volume in there.
And he had 13 wins too. So that's the, you know, how player raters treat wins. So that's a good amount of wins.
Yeah, it is.
13 wins and 20 starts.
I mean, he's behind Joe Ryan, Eric Fetty, and I know it's like one season to the next, you can't,
yeah,
you're not bringing this year's stats into next year. So I understand that, but I would say if it's before pick 90 and ahead of names like Flaherty, maybe, I don't know about Lopez, but Lopez found the K's down the stretch.
Yeah.
That'll be, here we are on the look back show saying, let's look ahead,
let's
but
look back,
that'll be an interesting like trio
Inception
to see.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Well, that's Grayson. And then I think we didn't spend enough time talking about Brandon Pfaadt, Steve, because we flagged him, and I think he was one of the later names we mentioned on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, from that date on, as long as I have the date range right, because I'm not sure I ran it from July 4th, that might be slightly off. But when I ran this list of like second half K minus BB, Pfaadt was number 11. A 27.6% K rate and a 5.4% walk rate. Pfaadt, speaking of guys that were not far removed from thinking they would be fantasy aces, the overall season line, the ratios look much uglier than, you know, if we're saying Grayson's were underwhelming. He had a 4.71 ERA, a 1.24 WHIP, but yeah, down the home stretch really started to show some stuff that was, you know, up there with the type of swing and miss, yeah, stuff, at least, that we were hoping for. It's just the ratios weren't really in check. Are we excited about Pfaadt?
Here's where K-minus BB could play a trick on you. Because in the second half, I'm just looking at starts from basically, you know, the all-star break on. He had games of 11 strikeouts, 0 walks, 10 strikeouts, 2 walks, 12 strikeouts, 0 walks, 9 strikeouts, 1 walk. So that was, what, 4 starts. He also had 4 starts where he gave up 8, 6, 4, 4, 5, 4 runs. So, like, he was from one day, like, I faced him in the finals in my home league matchup. There was one start where he completely, you know, won me the category facing him and gave up eight runs in 1.2 innings. Then the next game he pitched 7 innings and 12 strikeouts. So it was a really feast or famine for him down the stretch. And like there was a point where he became sort of unrosterable there from like the end of July to the end of August, where he was giving up, you know, essentially 3 to 8 runs every night. You know, there was that good Colorado start in there where he had 11 strikeouts and 0 walks, but he still gave up 4 runs. So it was a tough stretch for him, yeah. But I don't know. I still don't know if he's figured out lefties. Like, he has that elite sweeper that just does not work against lefties. And there's certain days and matchups where he, like, just doesn't have his fastball like he did in against Milwaukee at home and gave up a bunch of runs. And then he faced Milwaukee on the road and had 12 strikeouts, 1 run, 0 walks. There's also some really, really interesting splits on the home and road and like how his fastball plays up. He had a 13. I'm trying to look at the ERA. He has a 1.33 whip at home and a 1.17 on the road. Which is just pretty crazy. I think that Ito Saris was talking about how like the humidity in Atlanta may, or Arizona, whatever you have, something messes with his fastball, and he's a much worse pitcher at home. So there's some interesting splits there. 5.09 ERA at home in 88 innings, 4.34 on the road. So. Pretty,
you know what's also crazy? No idea what's happening with this, but just looking at his splits, day games versus night games, dude.
Love it.
He's got a 2.66 ERA in day games and a 5.92 in night games. Like, what? Huh? Yeah. I don't know if there's any science behind that, but Eno would. So maybe we'll put that in a mailbag for them. Yeah. But yeah, that's fought impressive on K-BB, but great point, Steve, that for all the times he was helping you, he might have been crushing your matchups there too. So then on the switching over to bold predictions, do we want to jump into these or?
Yeah, I think we can go through them pretty quickly.
Okay. Yeah. Why don't you start?
Let's sort of speed through them. I didn't realize that we did a hitter breakout candidates, which would have long enough rundown, but maybe we'll eventually mention it or something on the next show or something. Second half bold predictions. We didn't do a bold prediction show in the beginning of the season, right? Which is kind of why we wanted to do a second half bold prediction. Here's something fun that we talked about on the show that we got right that I would think would have qualified as a bold prediction. The MLB announced on Monday that they're going back to standard home and road jerseys for like the All-Star games. So like players will wear their team's home or road uniforms depending on who's home, who's away. So no more horrible All-Star jerseys. That was the 7-18 episode where you're venting about how horrible the jerseys were. So props to the MLB for going back to the All-Star to the jerseys for the All-Star game. And then, hey, that's a good call. I think it would have been a good bold prediction. But anyway, I think we each did 3. My bold predictions were Paul Skenes wins the NL Cy Young, Vlad Jr. finishes with 35 homers, and Pablo Lopez is a top 5 starting pitcher in the second half. None of those were technically true. All of those were right in spirit, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I mean, Skenes took off from there. He was already good at the time of it. But yeah, that what he did since the pod, a 2.03 ERA. And then I hadn't even realized how dominant September was with a sub-1 ERA. I mean, yeah, first round
worthy. SB1 next year or Scooball? Who do you got?
I think Skeens. I think Skeens just because of the buzz. And, like, it is a truly limitless ceiling where, yeah, I know Scooball's a ton, but this is just generational, which is thrown out too often. And then, yeah, Vlad, for sure. We've talked about him plenty. Pablo, yeah, like you got here, Steve. He was, at the time, 51st SP, and he finished 26th, so he made a ton of ground up. And another one that ratios were better than the K-minus BB. So, yeah, he'll be an interesting case study to break down because we love the pitcher there in Pablo Lopez. I had that Pivetta top 10 SP in the second half. Nope, the K-minus BB did look good again. Yeah. If only that was what won you fantasy leagues.
I forget who was talking about it. I think it was either Nick or Eno, but like just how Pivetta is just so perplexing and like just a guy that like the K-minus BB and all this stuff is going to love, but just sort of isn't what, like I think Nick's exact words were the sum of the parts is never.
Or right, greater than the whole.
Some of the parts never greater than the whole. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was for the second half of last year when he was so dominant, but not this year. The second half, he had a 4.20 ERA, 1.15 whip, so a little meh. Good Lord, Steve, the Ben Rice experiment. I overpaid in the listener league. I got razzed for it. He looked like, you know, Lou Gehrig for a week or two, and that was clearly around the time of this show. Where I said this guy would be a top three catcher in the second half. I loved all of the plate skills, the plate discipline. Went 2 for 3 in August and September and stopped getting playing time.
Yeah,
we'll spend more time on O'Neill Cruz. Had the bold prediction that he would have a 900 OPS in the second half. Since the pod, it was an 821 OPS, yep. So kind of right in spirit.
I'll give you credit for that one for sure.
You rightly pointed out, though, that the splits are still a pain point for O'Neill Cruz. And yeah, really beyond the OPS, it was the speed.
No, he was much better against lefties in the second half, made an adjustment, and it's pretty exciting. And there was a lot of speed, and he was still, you know, seemingly battling that ankle surgery throughout the year. So, you know, now he's in center field. I think there's a lot to like Cruz seems like a guy just on a, you know, the Price is Right yodel mountain. On the way, trajectory up.
Yeah. I know. We talked about him on the last show plenty, so we won't hang too much on Cruz. But we've got
maybe Ben Rice is going to have his Yankee moment with Rizzo out. Broken finger.
Put him in there in the Hall of Shame with Humberto Castellanos. my other classic call. Every now and then I go for some big swings. Yeah. All right, so we got a couple more episodes that we're going to look back on, but we're going to take our second break and we'll be right back after this. All right. So Steve, another episode we do every year is the rest of season strength of schedule, and very simple show in theory, because we're just looking at opponents and sometimes you can put too much weight into that, especially for pitchers. But we had identified that the Cubs, the Giants, the Tigers, the Yankees, and the Braves had the best strength of schedule, or the easiest, the rest of the way from July 25th, which is right around the time when you're kind of looking to finalize your playoff push rosters, you know, who's going to be a rental versus somebody you can actually ride the rest of the way. For the Cubs, we actually called out Dansby Swanson and Pete Crow Armstrong at the time because they were widely available. And yeah, Swanson.
Two of our better calls, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Swanson had not hit 240 in a month all year, and he had 7 steals up until that point. And just in August and September, he eclipsed 7 steals. He had 12, and that 240 average went up to 283 in the months of August and September. So Dansby kind of went back to being a reliable guy, at least from a contact speed standpoint. And speaking of contact speed, Pete Crow Armstrong, as everyone kind of knows, had a breakout of his own where up until the point where we recorded that show, he had hit 145 and 197 in June and July. And then in August and September, respectively, hit 314 and 256. And what was two homers in those first couple of months, jumped up to seven homers in August and September. So really productive from Pete Crow Armstrong. Surprisingly, I think the speed actually went the other direction for him in August and September. Maybe it's just because he was so busy hitting homers, but yeah, definitely
can't steal second when you're jogging around the bases.
Yeah. Saya Suzuki was one that you had, Steve. And he was solid all season, but from the point of our episode on 22nd highest OPS. So right out of the gate, the Cubs were great.
Yeah. Their offense was one of the best in the second half. And I think that was a product of the schedule and a good call on us for sort of pointing it out. Yeah, Swanson kind of saved his season. He also had, seven homers in the last 2 months, which is good for a guy that, hits, 16 to, anywhere from 15 to 20 homers in a given season. So he sort of salvaged his season, right? Like, he was looking pretty bad, and he ended up with a 700 OPS, 19 steals, and 16 homers. So, like,
respectable.
Sort of what you expected, maybe a little bit less than when you're drafting him, but like a good last grasp sort of shortstop in deeper league. So and Crow Armstrong had like a breakout in August and September. So pretty good stuff by us. And yeah, Saya is just, we talked about him last year, he's just a super underrated hitter ever since he got here 3 years ago.
Yep, and then on the Giants there, I know you flagged Tyler Fitzgerald, which we talked about a few shows back, and it's tough to make too much of kind of the pre and post, because really a lot of the playing time ramped up from July on, but he went pretty nuclear, so that's a good one. I think that Elliot
power
Ramos
sort of died off,
one,
but
that,
yeah.
A little yep, bit, think, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know if the Giants were as big a hit of the Cubs or some other teams that we'll talk about, but I know that there's an interesting power dynamic and change, but it seemed like while the Giants sort of underperformed and maybe didn't have the big names, they were, I guess, maybe pay a little bit more attention to when someone like Tyler Fitzgerald and Elliot Ramos. I know Ramos was a pretty big prospect at one point, but then he was almost like DFA'd and ended up putting together a really good season. Now he also sort of faded in the second half.
He fell. Yeah, he did fall off. You're right. I think the Giants, they did not capitalize
much. This was a miss. Yeah, I think this was a miss. Yeah.
Yeah, but for the Tigers, which we had flagged, Cary Carpenter at that time, which again, sitting versus lefties, but ninth in OPS since from July 25th to the end of the season. So that's a huge one. Yankees were on there just looking at them Soto and Judge, but whatever. Yeah. But the Braves.
And I know me personally, I sort of touted Gleyber Torres as a buy low all year. He was another guy in like the vein of Dansby Swanson, sort of salvaged his season in the second half. Sure, the overall line wasn't great, but he did end up with 15 homers, hit .257. The OPS is disappointing at 709, just a 104 WRC plus, but he was at least like respectable.
That's a good point.
The last 2.5 months of the season or so.
Yeah. Underrated September with hitting .333. So that's a good shout there.
Yep.
And jumping to the Braves, I think that's like the big one that, Matt Olson, anybody who rostered him was lamenting the entire season about when was he going to wake up. But from the point of that pod on, when we looked at the Braves' strength of schedule, he had the eighth most homers in the majors, which is right in line with kind of what you drafted, sixth in OPS. Ozuna, we already talked about. Kind of weird that the power took a step back, but he did hit .327 in August.
Yeah, no complaints.
And then Michael Harris, the second, 36th highest OPS, which is, again, kind of back in line with what you'd hope to see or expect to see. Me and Josh Berry were laughing because he posted that that little snippet of me talking about Michael Harris the second, and then like two nights later, like after talking about the discount, is when
he had his best game of the season, right? I meant to catch you on that. Yeah.
Yep. It was what was it like?
Two homers,
four
steal,
RBIs.
Something like that.
Steal in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the Braves. So I think that's a note that we got to keep doing this show.
Yeah.
If nothing else, there's
it's a good process.
It's a good process.
There's more right than wrong, and it's a good process, a good thing to do. you know, especially because we know, you know, at that point in the season on July 25th, we know, hey, the White Sox are really, really bad. Like, you know, half the Marlins starting pitchers are all hurt, right? Like,
yep.
You could target those teams. And I think it leads to some good guys to add off the wire for long term for their home stretch, and then also guys to potentially target in the trade.
Final trade targets. For
yeah,
sure.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, maybe we definitely have to continue to do that. I also want to shout out Austin Riley on the Braves, who was definitely in the midst of a bounce back. Myself and Alex T, a moderator in the Pitcherless Discord, had a bit of a mare's bet. I just sent him a Pitcherless Discord shirt because when Riley was going through it, I think back in, you know, March or June, I said that he would finish with 30 homers, and he got hurt and did not finish with 30 homers. But in his June and August, he started to come up to the pace. He had 19 469 plate appearances, which, you know, had he gotten to his 693 from 2022 or 715 even from 2023, it would have been close. He essentially like missed August and September, so he would have needed I want to see when he got hurt exactly, when his last game played was. He got hurt in the middle of August, so he needed 11 homers in a month and a half, which for Riley is doable, right? Like, he had a 9 homer month this year, I think. Yeah, he had 6 homers in June, 5 in July, and hit 5 in the first half of August. So need to essentially continue his June pace.
Right. But he's done that. He's had 9 homer months. Yeah. He had an 11 homer month a couple of years.
Another guy that was, you know, from that show on had an 850 OPS with 10 homers essentially.
Yeah. Now that, I mean, it's the Braves caught fire clearly. Yeah. And from that episode on, and it's like, yeah, they're the Braves. So it's not like it's rocket science, but at that time you got people who are willing to shop on the market as like trade deadlines approach and everything. So yeah, that's good process. Running a little long, Steve, but our final one we wanted to look at was waiver wire heroes on August 1st, where we were trying to project out, you know, from guys who were rostered under a certain threshold, you know, who are ones that we think could make a big impact. And I think there's some really good names on here. So I'll kind of rifle through some of these and then maybe we can zoom in on one or two. But Matt Wallner, since we recorded that show, 145 WRC plus, and he was kind of heating up leading into the show. If I recall, I think he was coming off of like 3 homers in the past six games or something like that. He went on to hit 7 more, an 857 OPS. So even the pop, I think there was room to grow there, but Wallner, could have been at least a waiver wire staple. Ryan Nelson, a 383 ERA and a 106 whip the rest of the way from that show, and 14th in K minus BB. So that's one where it marries up with the ERA and whip, which is good to see. David Festa, the ratios weren't as good, but he did have the 13th highest K percentage from that point on. And I think that's
Festa.
What we were kind of.
I like Festa next year. The Twins were a bit cautious with their younger starting pitchers that got called up. Him and Zebby Matthews, and I know they were in a racing for the playoffs and sort of were a dumpster fire down the stretch, but they essentially had like a short leash with them and like kind of had a plan like, okay, we're not going to like overextend our young guys, but there was more good than bad with Festa. And I think there's some interesting, there's some really interesting stuff, and I like him as a sleeper for next year already. If he will stay that.
Shout out Thomas Nestico, who talked him early on in the season on WAF, and we thought we might not even see him at all. Hayden Birdsong was on there, and I think we talked about for the K upside, which he didn't help much at all beyond that because of the ratios. He got lit up pretty bad with like a ERA north of 5, but he's another one that it's like, the 28% K rate, like, the command
stuff
is all
to
over
like.
The place.
Yeah, there's stuff to like.
So Birdsong is kind of a name to remember. Grant Holmes was the skipper, but Spencer Schwellenbach was the one that you were huge on, and he was hot going into that. But the way he finished out the season from that episode on, a 2.90 ERA, a 1.08 WHIP, 23rd on K minus BB. He is another one, Steve, that you got to imagine will have a lot of helium.
A lot of helium for draft day for sure.
So that's a good one. Ty France was a little ho hum, but a contributor.
Rosterable in like deep leagues, like that.
Yes,
hit in that sense. Yeah,
yeah. And he had just gone to the Reds, so 253 average, 7 homers. It's kind of in that Dansby territory of like contributing. Mm-hmm. Xavier Edwards
might have been our best hit on this show.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I don't know if he was on. I don't know if he was like on the heater that he was at this point in the show
at that time. Well, he certainly. We didn't know he was going to steal 22 bags over 2 months and hit 300, and that was with an IL stint. So yeah, Xavier Edwards, a little bit more than the old slap hitter is Blake.
So Edwards was really good in July. Edwards was really good in July too.
So he was trending up, but
he did. He hit 395 in 24 July games with.
Well,
with
I don't think we would have put him on the rundown if he was like 50% roster.
Sure,
we could go back. That's true.
But he had. He's another guy that's going to get, I think, a lot of hype. His last 3 months of steals: 9, 13, 9. Like that's. You know, that's like Ellie territory.
Yeah, that's from the beginning like a 60 of season two when he was running.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of speed, Josh Lowe, who we called out and
another
was
good call.
Pretty under rostered. Yeah, and from then on, hit 257, had 15 steals, despite only having 10 from May through July. So yeah, definitely turned on the speed. And then DJ Hers, man, this one is the one, Steve, that I had a choice between Dean Kramer. Or adding Dean Kramer or adding DJ Hers, and we have to hold our pitchers. And I added Kramer strictly to get the night game on Sunday and decide if I wanted to roll him out or not. I did not. He only went 3 innings the following weekend. Hers went off. That one decision would have won the title.
I don't know if you asked me specifically for my advice on that one.
I won't hold you to it.
Maybe
it was my decision.
Maybe,
I think I floated. I think I said hers.
I think I want to. Maybe we'll have to go back.
I might have to check the receipts because I remember I
feel worse. But
well, I was hyping up that to have the flexibility of the night game.
Yeah,
and I remember you were like, "No, the flexibility is good," but I don't remember.
Yeah, No, I definitely agreed with the logic.
That
it was a good.
It's a game of inches, man. Hers from that pod alone, 32nd. Or from that pod to the end of the season, 32nd highest K rate, 4th highest walk rate. So Hers is in that camp, kind of with Birdsong, that it's like there's stuff to like. But the ratios were good with Hers, with the 3.61 ERA, a 1.20 WHIP. That rounded out our waiver wire heroes. And man, for me, villains. Now I'm depressed rounding that story out. that would have won me my second league title. But these are good names, Steve. I think this was a really good show. Honestly,
I think so too. Some guys already started going like Edwards and Schwelly, but for the most part, like these guys were valuable. Maybe
not heroes.
Not Birdsong, but they're definitely valuable. Maybe that's sort of the process that we have to take, but hey, if you find guys like this, then those are the ones that can sort of go on and run and be a hero. It was a good process for sure. We did not do we did hitter and pitcher trade targets. We didn't do a hitter
second half breakouts. Yeah. You're right. I think we had done the all stars and we were like, it seems more actionable to do pitchers than
hitters. Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's safe to say we're fully audited for the 2024.
Yes, this is the report card. I think overall, you know, we're probably looking at like a solid B+ range. Yeah. But there's a lot of good there. I mean, if you followed us on some of these, including James, our listener, I certainly would have been happy with a Gunnar Vlad, Ozuna.
It gives me validation that I'm not a complete idiot. You know.
Well, you won your league, Steve, so you don't need that. But, we were right there all season. So thank you guys for being right there with us from the beginning. And all off season, we will be here every other week. So thank you guys as always. You guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified. Steve is at Stav8818. But that rounds out episode 158. Talking the year-end audit. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for a great season. Enjoy some playoff baseball. Talk with you guys soon. Later.
Later.